Good morning. 2026 is here and we are back in rhythm. Well, the markets are moving and so are you. From the BizNews studios, this is BizNews Daybreak for Tuesday, the 6th of January, 2026. I'm Alec Hogg and here's the context you need to win the day. Well, the Rand strength continued overnight. You might recall yesterday morning we were trading at 16.50, having just edged a little bit weaker after the capture, or news rather, of the capture of Maduro by the US forces. Well, that has not lasted very long. Strength overnight and yesterday the Rand is at 16.32 as we start the day. Bitcoin too has done well in the strength of, well, I guess it seems to be risk on again. 93,800 is the Bitcoin price. Remember, it was at 85,000 just a week or so ago. The gold price, just below $4,500. It too is strong. And overnight on Wall Street, the US stock market was firm with the major indices up by 0.2% overnight. Well, as expected, the Maduro story continues dominating global news headlines this morning. We're going to give you your fill today and starting off with the latest from our partners at Bloomberg.
Senior members of President Trump's national security team briefed select members of Congress on Venezuela. Here is House Speaker Mike Johnson after that closed-door session.
Despite the claims by some of my colleagues, under the War Powers Act, there is no requirement for prior congressional approval or prior notification. And in fact, in this case, the intelligence was so sensitive, the conditions had to be perfect. There was no predetermination of when exactly it would occur.
That is House Speaker Mike Johnson. Monday evening, President Trump suggested the U.S. may subsidize efforts by U.S. energy companies to rebuild Venezuela's oil industry. Trump told NBC News the project could be up and running in less than 18 months. Trump also said a tremendous amount of money will have to be spent, with oil companies being reimbursed by the U.S. or through revenue. And sources tell Bloomberg U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright will be meeting with oil industry executives this week. More from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Wright will attend the Goldman Sachs Energy, Clean Tech, and Utilities Conference in Miami this week that executives from Chevron, ConocoPhillips, and other companies are scheduled to attend. Francisco Minaldi is Director of Latin American Energy Policy at Rice University's Baker Institute.
Venezuela could multiply by 4 or even 5 its production. At least that's technically possible. Politically is, of course, another question.
The source says before making any commitments to Venezuela, oil companies want to ensure there is a stable government in place and that the rule of law is upheld. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Radio.
All of this came as Maduro appeared in court in New York City and pleaded not guilty to charges in a narco-terrorism case against him. Maduro, speaking through an interpreter, said that he is innocent and a decent man and president of his country. While he awaits his trial, Maduro will remain at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. Here is Bloomberg's Miles Miller.
In 2019, there was no heat, no hot water, and so inmates there went on a hunger strike. Not great conditions. The Bureau of Prisons say that they have fixed some of those conditions. In fact, I saw a number of procurement documents that they want to get a new HVAC system in there, but it's not great. They get 3 meals a day, they're leaky faucets, 7-foot cells, not great conditions. One judge here in the Southern District said that they were barbaric, so it's a far cry from the presidential palace he was living in Caracas just 72 hours ago.
That is Bloomberg's Miles Miller. We go to Denmark next, where Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen said that if Donald Trump were to attack Greenland, that would mean the end of the NATO alliance. Frederiksen believes Trump means it seriously when he says that he wants Greenland, and she is urging him to stop these threats. Heather Connolly is a former Deputy Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs.
The Danish and Greenlandic response first started as sort of, ha-ha, not for sale. Mm-hmm. No, really, it's a territory, and we're a NATO partner, and we're a good partner, and we've been strong allies. Today was stop, enough, And if you do this, you are now ending NATO as we know it, because one NATO country is now going to be attacking another NATO country.
Now, a military move in Greenland would strike at the foundation of the NATO alliance. It's based on the principle of collective defense, in which an attack on one member is considered an attack against all.
One of my favorite historians is the best-selling author Neil Ferguson. He says that Donald Trump's intervention in Venezuela was actually telegraphed 2 months ago.
What I think was really interesting about the national security strategy was only a November document, only a few weeks old, was that it explicitly said there's now a Trump corollary. And to me, that was a remarkable throwback, 120 years, to a time when the United States openly asserted its right to get rid of any government in Latin America, including the Caribbean, that it didn't care for, that it thought was falling short of whatever standards it sought to apply. And so for me, it's long overdue that the government in Venezuela of Nicolas Maduro is overthrown, because for a quarter of a century, the Chavistas, he's the heir of Hugo Chavez, have been ransacking what was once a wealthy country and have turned it into a failed state. So my reaction was good. Great start to the new year.
In this interview with the Free Press, which you can find on YouTube, Ferguson also warned that anyone commenting about what happens next in Venezuela is probably guessing. And he explains this because those who do know should not be saying anything. The reason is that they have access to top secret documents, and that would be treason. And on the other hand, it has been kept so tight that those who think they know or suggest that they know what actually went down are guessing.
One of the things that I've learned is you can't know from the outside what is being done on the inside, and it's premature to pass judgment on this. I suspect that it would be a tactical mistake for the president to back her at this point when the levers of power are still in the hands of Maduro's lieutenants. So there's a tactical consideration here. Ultimately, presidents are not in the business of, you know, writing editorials. They're in the business of making policy. And what obviously we would not want to see would be a descent into civil war. That's the kind of nightmare scenario that any intervention can lead to. In a way, it happened in Iraq. If you want to think back to the way things went off the rails there, they got rid of Saddam Hussein. That turned out to be easy. But then the problem was that without the regime, then the sectarian conflicts between Sunni and Shia and Kurds all rapidly escalated and the place became ungovernable. It's not exactly the same for obvious reasons, but I think you can understand why at this early stage, you don't want to alienate the people who have the guns. And the people who have the guns are the Chavistas.
But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be looking for context. Our partners at the Financial Times provide excellent insights. Here's the FT News Briefing host, Victoria Craig, talking to the group's Latin American editor, Michael Stott.
President Trump on Saturday said that Delcy Rodriguez would essentially help run the country under U.S. direction. But in a televised meeting flanked by the country's interior, defense, and foreign ministers that very same day, she pledged that Venezuela would not be anyone's colony while describing U.S. actions as barbaric. So, Michael, is there any kind of working relationship at the moment between the U.S. and Venezuela?
I think, Victoria, we have to remember first that Delcy Rodriguez is in a very difficult position. She's caught between the U.S., which has just captured and extracted her president by force and is now making a load of demands on her, and a domestic audience of regime hardliners who want her to fight back. And if she's going to survive and lead the country in that situation, she has to try to gesture towards both sides. So I think what she'll try to do in the next few days is consolidate her position, try to shore up her support within the regime and keep the regime functioning and keep it cohesive. And the key question, I think, in the next days is whether that Venezuelan regime can hang together or whether it starts to fight.
Does that risk of political instability risk spreading wider, not just inside Venezuela, but to the region and potentially even the world?
This was a very dramatic intervention, Victoria. I think we should remember it's the first time the United States has ever taken military action against a South American country. And so that sent an enormous shockwave across the continent and has alarmed the governments of countries like Brazil and Mexico, Colombia, who fear that they might be next. Looking more broadly, it sends a concerning signal that if the United States feels it's able to go in and capture and extract a sitting head of state to face trial back at home, one wonders how Xi Jinping might think about that or how Vladimir Putin might think about that. I mean, it opens up all sorts of quite worrying possibilities, I think, across the world for autocratic leaders who want to violate international law and impose their will.
On Wall Street last night, well, while we were sleeping here in South Africa, oil stocks reacted strongly to the latest developments. Here's Carol Mazar and friends at Bloomberg.
Well, let's talk about some of the biggest gainers in the market today. We all know this is oil stocks. Of course, this is after Trump pledged to revive Venezuela's energy sector following the capture of Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro. Trump, of course, saying that they'll spend billions of dollars to rebuild out this sector. But we do know that this is a multi-year process, as we've been hearing from experts, but also a full revival could take many years and cost upwards of about $100 billion. This is what we've been hearing echoed all across the news.
And you need a stable government
today,
right? You need a government that's business friendly and wants to support the economy and certainly the energy economy.
Right. And we know Chevron is actually one of the companies that is still operating in Venezuela, unlike a lot of its counterparts when we think about the major U.S. oil companies. So we are seeing Exxon, Chevron, a few of the others as some of the biggest gainers in the S&P 500 in terms of percentage action.
All right. You're also watching Coinbase today.
Yes. This was actually one of the companies that was among the best performing stocks in the S&P 500. This was after a double upgrade over at Goldman. They upgraded it to buy, or sorry, not a double upgrade. Oh, this is one upgrade. Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. An upgrade to buy from neutral from Goldman. They're essentially talking about the growth potential from some of its new products like tokenization as well as prediction markets, which we've been talking about so much.
Also from Bloomberg in the news right now, again, the world's most valuable company, NVIDIA.
The CES Tech Conference officially gets underway Tuesday in Las Vegas, and today, Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, announced a group of AI models and tools designed to speed up development of autonomous vehicles. Huang said the aim is to help create vehicles that can think their way out of unexpected situations, such as a traffic light outage. Here is Huang.
Today we're announcing Alpamayo, the world's first thinking, reasoning, autonomous vehicle AI. Alpamayo is trained end-to-end, literally from camera in to actuation out.
Huang went on to say that NVIDIA's new Rubin data center products are nearing release this year. The Rubin accelerator is better at training and running AI software than its predecessor, the Blackwell chip.
Locally, South Africans are very much still in holiday mode. Very little company news coming out from the JSE, excepting, though, that BizNews, the portfolio favorite, Lewis, was up another 2.5% yesterday. It's now at a new high of 94 Rand. Thank you, Piet Viljoen. It was due to the fact that he's been banging the Lewis drum for so long that we added it to the Ricardo and the Shift the Ricardo portfolios, rather. ArcelorMittal, on the other hand, dropped 8.5% to a new trough of 1 Rand 17. That's not good news for the hopes for a rescue of the Newcastle long steel plant. If there are continued declines in the ArcelorMittal share price, it suggests that the IDC isn't the only would-be buyer who have withdrawn from all negotiations. Yeah, tough time for my old hometown. And now you have the edge for the full interviews and details behind these stories. Head over to biznews.com. I'm Alec Hogg. Thank you for starting your morning with us. Now go and seize the day.